This is Fam Electric Ghost, and we're live on the air with Sal Holden, and you're an intuitive life coach, and we're talking more about that. But I want to thank you for being on the show tonight. At least that's tonight where we are in New Hampshire, USA. Thank you for being a guest on the Fam Electric Ghost podcast.
Thanks so much, Phantom. It's wonderful to be here. And yes, it's currently 9 a.m. in Australia. So,
yeah, that's the magic of being able to talk to people from around the world. You know, we initially did interviews with musicians. We could interview people in Australia, which we've done before in Japan. And so we're aware of this time zone difference, day difference. You're on a different day. So that's really, you know, really cool that I think that we can reach that far. It's very, very, very interesting to me to be able to do that. But one of the first questions I always ask anybody that's on the show is, what motivates you and why do you do what you do?
I love that question because I think it's the crux of really like a deeper, meaningful and purposeful life as well. And what motivated me, particularly in the beginning, was certainly my two girls. And so they're 21 and 23 years old now. And I actually have a little grandson as well. So that's extra motivation. But I did go through a huge period of my life where things kind of fell apart. I became a single mum. My mum passed away and I found myself not showing up as the mum that I really wanted to be. And that was really what started my own personal journey into figuring things out and trying to figure out this game of life and how to show up as the best human that I could possibly be. So my girls definitely, these days it's a lot more intrinsic. So it comes a lot more internal motivation of my own joy and sense of well-being and sense of happiness as well.
I think that's real important because people are trying to be so perfect because we have so many tools today. You know, if you see somebody on social media, like, is that them or did they Photoshop it? You know, when they're talking, is that AI talking or is that them talking? People are so scared to be vulnerable. They're so scared to kind of be their authentic self.
Absolutely. Yeah, it can be huge in so many ways. And exactly what you're saying, like with all the AI coming out now and everything, I think people really are looking for that authentic, real connection. And it's what connects us as humans as well, right? Like that heart to heart, that being human.
Yeah, it's just, there's so much kind of pressure on a lot of people to make things perfect or to, you know, you deal with creative people and you find like a painter and you go to their loft, they got 100 paintings sitting in the loft and say, are any of these in the gallery? And they say, I'm not ready. Well, it looks like it's ready to me, but like they can't get beyond that, you know, imposter syndrome or the self-doubt. It's really important. It's like, you don't have to be an artist to be in that zone. It's like just everyday people run into this problem because they feel like they're in the comparison trap of like, they got to be like the Joneses. Like they got to be like their neighbor. They got to be like this other person that's got $1 million. Like why?
100%. Yeah. And it's, you know, perfectionism kills creativity and that need to get it right and get it perfect. And it's such a huge impact on squashing our gifts and our talents and our purpose and just putting our biggest and greatest things out into the world, raw and authentic and vulnerable and all of those different things. But I definitely found that to be the case even with my book that I launched last September. And it was that, yeah, just releasing it out into the world, there were so many fears that come up for sure. So I can definitely relate to what you're saying there too, Phantom.
So like, there's a question you like to answer. It talks about like, how do you reframe failure? And, you know, I like to see your point of view on that. Cause from a musician point of view, there's a lot of famous people have kind of talked about Herbie Hancock, Miles Davis. They said, you know, they were talking about, there's no bad notes, right? Mm. If you hit a so-called bad note, it's an opportunity to evolve the song. Or you could sit there and say you hit the bad note and let everybody know you hit it. Or you could kind of play off of it and actually look at it as an opportunity. So maybe you can talk about how you reframe failure in a similar way.
Yeah, I think, you know, one of the biggest pieces around all of that is what we make it mean. And actually consciously asking ourselves, like, if we're feeling impacted in some way, shape, or form, or we believe the thought that we've failed, really questioning, you know, what am I actually making that mean about this particular thing? Perhaps it is a great learning opportunity, or perhaps it is a different way of doing something. It's part of that learning process. And I know it's so cliche to say, but there is no success without failures as well, or learning and growth. And it is all part of embracing, I think, the uncertainty of those things so that we can learn from those experiences, definitely. And I think that builds having a flexible and adaptable mindset around our experiences and perhaps what we're failing in or what we perceive that we're failing in, and asking ourselves, what is great about this? Oh, well, I just found out a new way to not do this, or I just figured out, okay, that didn't work, what could work instead? Or it might be, you know, particularly in science, I think there's so many exciting discoveries
happy
that happen
accidents.
As a result of a mistake or failure in that sense. So, yeah.
We find so many things in the software design, they're unintended happy accidents. And it happens, like, you know, as a musician, I'm a producer in the studio, and you have all these things you planned. You could have put it on the bars. You could have it all sheet music written down. But then the drummer does something that wasn't written down. The bass player does something that wasn't written down. And it's better than what the songwriter wrote. And then you have to kind of say, like, you have the guts to challenge the paradigm in the room. Because the paradigm in the room is like, hey, this person might be an alpha type of person. If you challenge them and say, hey, you know, this is actually better than what you wrote down. And then are you going to get into a fight? You know, or can you sell that? Can you negotiate that? How do you deal with that? You know, and can't you even negotiate with yourself, right? Like, you might have a plan and then you don't read the audience, right? You don't read the room, and then you're failing because you want to go with what you planned, because you think, well, if I planned it, it must be good. But sometimes it's like being in the present moment. Well, that's not working. So, like, read the room and adjust.
Totally. And I think part of that nuance is also, you know, getting out of what I call the ego survival mind, which is all completely rule driven. It has to be this way. It's very black and white. It's right and wrong. It's good and bad, and perceives things in that way, as opposed to what I believe, you know, the soul or the spirit or our authentic self, the larger part of ourself, which is here for the soul expression. And it's all okay in that. And that's where we get to express, you know, our uniqueness and perhaps the way that it was actually meant to be, rather than what our ego survival mind may believe in that moment.
Yeah, and that survival mind, we're getting hit with so many wolves at the door. Like, there was a real wolf at the door back in the day, right? There's a wolf chasing you through the woods, right? And so you had to deal with that. But now, like, you can have these wolves that are more like in the mind, or because of a word, or because of an image, or because of a triggered thing you see on social media, or what your boss says, or what your wife says, what your partner's, what some stranger says. Mm-hmm. And how do you react to that? Is like how you learn how to grow or kind of stagnate in a cycle.
100%. Yeah. And I believe, I remember my mentor sharing with me one day, like, responsibility. And it's like, if it's impacting me, that is my responsibility. And if we break that word down, it's response ability, our ability to respond to situations and circumstances as well, and how skilled we are at that, whether we continue to run or be in fear, or we find the courage within to be able to face those particular challenges that show up.
Now, you talked about kind of people in, like, ennui or being tired or feeling tired all the time. And is that a result a lot of times of, like, melancholy or sadness or other things? You can maybe dive into, like, what are the steps that you should take when you're tired? Maybe, do you have to, like, analyze, like, why are you feeling tired? What is, like, the source of it?
I think there's so many multiple factors when it comes to exhaustion and burnout and tiredness. And I think a lot of it these days is just our particular lifestyle and all of those pressures that we put on ourselves, or again, the way that we're perceiving things in our experience. So whether it be, you know, our partner or our boss is having a bad day and we're perceiving it and making it mean something about ourselves, or just, you know, that causes dysregulation in the nervous system, which produces a lot more cortisol, which creates a lot more inflammation, which impacts the way that our body's functioning and the ability of the body to be able to produce the energy that it actually needs as well. And I think particularly with what we've seen, obviously, over the last 4 years, with the world being basically turned upside down, there were so many unknowns, so much uncertainty. And I think the adrenals in particular get very exhausted, which is what produces our cortisol and our adrenaline to be able to function every single day. All of that was like, you know, the body's like constantly feels like it's being chased by the wolf, as opposed to feeling like calm and relaxed and all of those things. So the way that we communicate with ourselves and the way that we're filtering our situations, circumstances, challenges by what we're actually telling ourselves about those events, or even just what we're focused on and thinking about, we may not have even had that experience happen, yet we're creating these fears in our mind by what we're focused on. And all of that, I believe, creates and generates a lot of exhaustion. I think also another factor in there, obviously, is the quality of the food that we're eating and how much water and caffeine and things like that that we're consuming. There's very much a physical part of that, and how much we're being, you know, we feel able to process our emotions and all of those different factors, along with our ability to be able to really follow what is correct for us and to be able to have healthy boundaries and say no when we actually need to, and not be inauthentic and saying yes to all these things because we believe that we need to keep others happy, which is a core part of what our ego survival mind believes to be true. But really understanding, yeah, unless we're actually really aligning with what's correct and true for us, that unconsciously creates so much exhaustion in the body because we're forcing ourselves to do things that we feel obligated to do rather than from the joy of being able to consciously choose, yeah, this is how I want to live my life. This is what I choose to do today. And I think a lot of people feel trapped in that as well.
Do you feel like a lot of women are trapped in the like caretaker, people pleaser kind of mindset where they're not able to really take care of their self? They're not able to do self-love because they feel guilty about self-love because they feel they should be their caretaker. And if they try to take care of themselves, they should be taking care of somebody else. Or they, you know, so they have to people please or caretake instead of actually doing what they need to self-actualize. Is kind of thought of as something that you should be shameful of or not even focus on.
Oh, I absolutely agree with that. I believe that we've had so much indoctrination, and I think, you know, to some degree, men have also experienced this as well. However, the main people that I work with are women, and obviously speaking from a woman's perspective as well, I certainly know, you know, I got lots of validation, lots of reward as a young child for, you know, being the good girl, for helping out, for always acknowledging everybody else's needs. And I think when our value as a person in our own identity gets deeply interlinked with giving and taking over responsibility for others and for others' well-being, I think that's when the wires get crossed, because then we feel bad about ourselves if we do rest or we do try and take time for ourselves. Or even worse, you know, we can be in situations where other people may get very angry or not honor or respect our own boundaries or our own need for rest as well, depending on where our self-love and self-worth is at. And certainly that was my experience for about 14 years of my life, just selflessly giving, you know, with like not filling my own cup. And that builds so much anger and resentment over time as well, which is our body alerting ourselves to the fact we've violated our own boundaries and our battery's running really, really, really low too. Mm-hmm. So I do believe it's a societal thing, but it's also when it's deeply interlinked as our values as a person, it can be a really difficult one to shift and to move out of. And so many women feel guilty for resting. Yeah.
There's a lot of social mores, you know, about like, you know, roles in society, and there's so much pushback because there's a lot of changes in the 21st century where people, you know, in our country, we got people trying to bring laws back to the 1700s and the 1800s because they want it to be like that, right? So they feel like progress is too hard because I have to deal with others. I have to deal with the other gender and in a way that I don't feel comfortable, right? And so you got these like systems that are designed kind of top down, you know, to kind of push other people into roles that they're expected to be in those roles. And then when they try to actualize and be an individual in a society that says you want individuality, but then when people actually express individuality and say, well, I don't want that.
It's the double bind that happens, isn't it, that keeps people stuck. And I think that's where it is so important to come back into that personal sovereignty and choice and autonomy of what is really right for me. And a couple of things that really helped me shift that guilt was not wanting to pass on the martyrdom, certainly that I saw my own mum, portray in her own life. She was very loved and did a lot of things for other people, but at the cost ultimately, I believe, of her life. She died from cancer at 59, and I believe that so much of our internalized anger, when we're not actually taking care of ourselves and doing the things that are right for us, can lead to greater inflammation, which then causes so much disease and stress and things like that. And for me personally, I did not want my girls growing up believing that they couldn't rest when they had kids or they couldn't do something for themselves. So it was like, okay, I need to be the leader here. And so that way I chose to actually role model and demonstrate that, because I didn't want that for my girls. And that was really what helped me transform a lot of that guilt, because it was still there. It was it was there a lot.
There's a lot of autoimmune diseases, like in multiple cultures. I've lived in Japan. I live in the United States now, but like there's certain like mindsets that put so much stress on a person, and then you can get, they're pillars to your human body. Like you have the mental, your physical, your heart, your soul. Like if you don't take care of one of the pillars, I was talking to a person that was a personal trainer, and they had 6-pack abs and they outwardly looked great, but their mental state, when they looked in the mirror, they didn't see the 6-pack abs. They saw somebody that was like lacking. So there's multiple pillars to a human being. Like even though outwardly you might look fine, you might look better than fine, if you don't take care of the other pillars, then things fall apart. And sometimes we like to go for the quick fix. It's like the 10-step solution, the pill or the immediate kind of panacea, instead of realizing sometimes there's hard work, or you have to like reflect in that looking glass self. I'm always into the Victorians, but the idea is you kind of got to look into that mirror and see who do you see in that mirror, and start questioning like where are you, like where do you want to be? If you never really think about those things, you might have already been in kind of the cycle.
100%. Yeah, I know for a long period of my life between 13 and 32, I absolutely had the belief that I was fat and ugly and no one would love me. Like I absolutely believed it without no doubts at all, that it was the solid truth. And it wasn't until I started to learn how to actually shift my beliefs, it's been completely life-changing on so many levels. And I totally agree with you. We can have exceptional physical health, but again, if our mental health or emotional health or spiritual well-being, ultimately our connection to ourself and our most authentic self isn't there, we can be doing all of these things out of lack, fear, and scarcity of the greatest fear I believe that we have as humans, which is, I'm not enough. And when that's the driving factor, there's no amount of doing that will ever overcome that. You've got to challenge the belief and thought in order to be able to exit the hamster wheel, because otherwise it just keeps you on this end, trying to be better and trying to be perfect. There's no end to that. it leads to a very, maybe perhaps.
Yeah, it's like the search for wealth. If you say I want $1 million, then you want $2 million, when you want $5 million, say what is it that you're looking for? Financial security, like certain trappings. You're gonna find somebody that has more trappings than you. So then it's like, what is that? So it's like, why do you want to do what you're doing, right? So like, what is the purpose? Do you want to be, secure financially? You don't necessarily have to have $1 million to be secure. Like you can have your own business and it's not generating that kind of money, but you could feel totally fine. But it's like, why are you doing what you're doing? It's like, it's that comparison trap. You're trying to be like the Joneses. You're trying to be like this. It's like, well, why don't you try to be you? But do you even know who you is?
I totally agree. And I know I worked with a client. She was a financial planner for a number of years. And she said, I've got clients that have $20 million like in investments and everything. And they still are terrified that they haven't got enough. And I truly believe that's where it comes back to the energy of why are we doing what we're doing? Is it driven by fear or is it driven by, you know, a joy and a desire for growth? And I think the two can be very different energies to play with, because I do believe that we're here to expand and grow and become more and create more perhaps, and even be able to contribute more as a result of creating more. However, yeah, if it's constantly from that, I need to be better, or I'm still not good enough, or I still haven't got enough, it's a very unhappy cycle for sure.
It's interesting because, you know, the whole perfection trap and the, you know, unwillingness to go with happy accidents or to be like, one of the people I like to talk about all the time because I'm a musician is David Bowie. And David Bowie has a couple of gems out there. One of the things he said when people were asking him about his kind of chameleon-like nature of changing all the time, he said, well, I like to tread water as an artist. He's like, what do you mean? It's like, I like to go somewhere where I'm not the expert. Mm-hmm. I'm not the best. It's like, I'll go and work with, like, you know, with somebody that can sing better than me. Like I'll go work with somebody that can play guitar better than me, that's a better producer than I am, that's a better at anything, like label it down, like a better actor than I am. And I'll go try to do it and know that I'm not really at the top of that field, but I'll still go and try it and do my best effort and not, you know, be so, drawn into a despair if I don't hit the mark, because it's part of my process is to challenge myself.
I love that. And it is, it's so true, isn't it? It's like when we are valuing growth for the sake of growth and learning and experimenting and playing, and we're not putting all that pressure on ourselves that it's, you know, have to be perfect. You know, it takes a lot of humility, to be able to do that, or humbleness, particularly for somebody that has, you know, achieved so much externally success-wise and things, but also it's letting go of, dissolving the ego of I need to be the best at this, and just being willing to learn and play and grow, which I believe is where a lot of the creativity also comes from, and the different things that we can learn from those experiences.
I think when you push yourself to the bleeding edge, if you just keep on doing what you're good at, well, you become an expert at it. You did like a 10,000 hours of doing the same thing.
Totally.
But eventually, like if you want to grow, you change like into a different field. You go into a, you know, scientist goes into a different type of science, you know, an actor goes and, you know, they do film and they go and do Broadway. They put themselves on a live stage. You know, they go and do comedy when they're a dramatic artist. A comedian goes and does drama. You go and push it. And it's not that you are the expert at it, but like once you open the door, you get more expansive. And I think it's like kind of growth mindset that you can do a little bit of that treading water, but it's like you have to believe that you have the capacity to become more. But if you have a mindset that you're not good enough, then you're never going to think you could become more. So then you're never even going to try to become more.
Yeah, and it's we squish it down and we don't even try to begin with because of that essential huge fear of failure as well that can come up for people. I loved reading Matthew McConaughey's book in The Green Lights, where he said he literally did not want to be known as the rom-com guy anymore. And so he stopped taking contracts for like 2 years or something until he finally got offered something in a more expansive role for himself as well. I thought that was quite amazing in his own personal journey.
Yeah, because when you get these actors that suddenly change their dynamic,
their genre,
They go into something and they, you know, they either do method acting or they take on a villain role or they take on someone like a polar opposite of what you expect they could do. And it's always amazing because it's like, it's cool to see somebody grow, you know, and so grow as instead of being typecast into, like, you know, in the music industry, we get these people doing a one-hit wonder. Like, they're more than that one-hit wonder, but they got typed into it. And now all they're known for is that one song. And it's very kind of destructive to their overall growth because no one ever sees them as anything else.
Yeah, yep, absolutely. I found the same even in my own journey as well of learning different modalities. I started with kinesiology and that was amazing. And it's quite an expansive modality in itself because there's so many different things that you can bring in when you're actually using kinesiology. However, like all of it expanded my understanding and created nuances around different aspects around like healing and energy. And so it doesn't matter what the field is. I think when we are expanding in that particular way, it deepens your original understanding of perhaps even the field that you were an expert in to begin with as well. Certainly I found that was true in my case of it just brought so much more understanding. And it's like, oh, this fits here and this fits here. And this is where this goes. And it just, yeah, it helps with all of it. It's amazing.
But the universe is so interesting because, you know, like as a musician, we think about like energy, but more like in frequencies. So I'm a synthesis. So I understand frequencies. I understand like waveforms. So certain waveforms can be like harmonious or dissonant or noisy, or, you know, they can be discordant. So you could, if you do something that's very harmonious and you go do a live concert, everybody's kind of in a wave. They feel harmonious. You can actually trigger people to be like in waves or kind of really together in this kind of behavior.
Totally.
But if you're out there with like a punk aesthetic, sound like the Clash or the Sex Pistols or the Ramones or Green Day, then they'll be jumping around in the mosh pit, kind of more chaotic because more dissonant. You can trigger kind of like a punk aesthetic, and then everybody gets kind of behavior. So you can trigger different emotions by different sound waves. And then I felt like you can see this when you walk in a room with the vibe. You kind of get a bad vibe from somebody because I feel these frequencies, and you know, you could probably talk more to it, but I feel like they're out there, and either you're in tune with them and you can read them, or you may be unconscious about it and you read them and you don't know you're reading them.
100%. Yeah, we definitely had that experience that I went to Dr. Joe Dispenza's advanced retreat quite a few years ago, and the whole room like was erupting in laughter. There was, you know, something that had happened, and it was like that whole just, it was like a wave that started up one end and just like heated through because everyone was in like heart coherence and in those upper frequencies, as you were speaking about as well. And I definitely agree that I think music has such a beautiful power of raising our emotional frequency without us actually having to effort at it. Sometimes if we're not feeling the way that we want to be feeling, you know, we can start, I often talk about the emotional guidance scale, and there's kind of like powerlessness, despair, grief, fear at the bottom of the scale, and then anger is a little bit further up, and then disappointment, discouragement, overwhelm, frustration. And then it gets up into curiousness and courage and optimism. And, you know, like songs, really good songs, I think start like down in those lower frequencies and actually build through and are very uplifting, that end up, you know, in the joy and the freedom and the gratitude and the with the way that they do that. And I think any song that makes you feel really good is definitely really helpful for that. But I'm sure everybody has had that experience. I certainly have, where, you know, you listen to something and it's like, oh, don't want to listen to that today because it's the wrong vibe. It's the wrong frequency.
It's the wrong thing. It's like you have something that's like really like the Ramones. It's like, I want to go and be like a punk rocker. Well, that's being more kind of like stick it to the world. And like, you might not want to be, you might want to be more like in a song that's like uplifting, like a Stevie Wonder kind of like very kind of enlightening world. Totally. Like everybody's holding their hand in the world and you're
unity.
Trying to
it's
like universal love. Like you're like a Bob Marley. You said like one love or something. You when sometimes you connect, you get a John Lennon. You get a Bob Marley. They do something that's like universally peaceful, connected, hopeful. That's the vibe you're feeling. Or you could get into like a Karen Carpenter, like, well, I'm in melancholy today. I'm just totally into that, right? So that's where your mindset is. But that's not where the Bob Marley song is. It's a two different places.
Totally. And how irritating sometimes, you know, if you are in a lower mood and a happy song comes on and it's just like, turn it off. It's not where I'm at.
Like, no, I'm not going to be happy. I'm not that, like, you know, that be happy song is not going to work today for me.
Totally.
I'm not into that. When I listen to a like a sad Elton John, like romantic song that's talking about loss or something. Right. So you get these singer songwriters that kind of speak to you. And as people get these, you know, I call them like sound paintings or like, you know, cause like it's a music can kind of put this picture in your mind and you can get that feel. Like when you're looking at a great piece of art, you get that feeling. You look at, you know, Mona Lisa, you look at Picasso, you look at Monet, you look at all these things, you can get certain feelings. Songs can trigger that too. They can trigger like cinematic, like pictures in your mind, or like points in time where you heard that song. You associate that, each fan associates it with a certain feeling from the first time they heard it, and it triggers it again.
Absolutely. Yeah. So powerful. Music is such a beautiful way of playing with shifting our emotions in different ways. Definitely.
But it's interesting. Like, how do you do that? Like without music, like how do you get somebody to like read the energy in the world and figure out how to do it? Because I feel like the energy is coming from like voices. It's coming from nature. It's coming from the outside. It's coming from the inside. So like, how do you manage that like day to day?
Yeah, it can be a lot. And depending on, I guess my belief is, you know, and certainly what I've experienced in my life is the more that I changed my internal state and how I felt and believe, you know, what I believe to be true about myself. So it essentially increased my level of self-love. The external often changed in conjunction with that as well. Like it really became a reflection of what was actually shifting there. And I used to use situations and circumstances to actually activate or trigger certain things inside of me to realize, oh, this actually still needs some healing work. So when somebody was reflecting back to me that they weren't happy with me for some reason, or wasn't appreciating me or valuing me in the way that I believe that they should, again, we're generally walking around projecting our own rules on everyone and everything. And so I use the Byron Katie work as one of my main techniques in actually how to shift a lot of those feelings and beliefs of, you know, they should value me, they should appreciate me. How do I feel? I feel angry. I feel ripped off. I feel devalued. I feel worthless. And yet I didn't understand that it was me actually making me feel like that from the way that I was actually perceiving what I was experiencing from them, rather than actually understanding they're just projecting their own pain and hurt perhaps in that moment of where they're actually at. And then when I flip that around and it's like, how would I feel without that belief or thought? Oh, I'd feel totally fine. And then it was also realizing like whatever I'm expecting somebody else to do for me, that's actually my work, that's my job. So, you know, they should value me and appreciate me became I should value me and I should appreciate me. And I don't know about anybody else, but when I first started down this self-love path and realizing I had no clue, like literally at 32 when my marriage fell apart, my mum passed away, and I'm like, I don't know how to love myself. Like I'm 32 and have no clue how to do this. And so some of the things that I started doing was even just asking myself questions like, you know, how, what would I do today if I already valued and loved myself? Like even that can just be a really basic question, but I believe self-love is both a feeling, how we feel about ourselves, but it's also a verb. Like it's a doing, it's a, putting into action. These are the things that I do as a direct result of self-love. And I used to work out at the gym and I did that without self-love, which felt more like, you know, punishing myself and belting myself into shape as opposed to loving myself into shape and doing it because it was a way of expressing my own self-love to myself. Yeah,
you said that's a really big step when people, when you're able to start to, you know, do that self-analysis. It's kind of like this idea with like Buddhists is like we have this law of attraction. Like, so if I get my frequency to a point where I'm in a positive direction, then I'm going to have positive like inputs from people around me. where the kind of negative inputs are going to fall off because I'm not generating that negative frequency. So I'm going to draw people. Like, if I believe in myself, then I'm going to get opportunities because I'm radiating that belief. And then these things are going to start to happen. And the opportunities would just seem like they're magically appear, but they're not really magically appearing. You're getting into the right frequency to see them and to go toward them, and the people to come to toward you.
So, and to action them as well.
Yeah. You get to make moves that maybe you wouldn't make because you didn't believe in yourself. So now you're going to believe in yourself. So you'll make those steps that things will start to kind of fall in place.
Totally. And I think what also helped me, you know, go from feeling, you know, the law of attraction is all a little woo-woo to actually like implementing it like on a logical and it just understanding it on a very logical basis was actually what I'm believing is literally impact the way that I'm feeling. So be it positive or negative, but if we use a negative example, you know, like if I'm not believing in myself, I believe I can't do it, you know, then my feeling state is very diminished. The action I'm going to take is probably going to be very minimal from that, which then is not going to produce much result, which is then going to reinforce the belief. See, I told you I can't do it. And so, you know, even just breaking it down on a really logical level, when people understand that, or even a belief like, you know, people don't like me, you know, we become standoff. We shut down, we're not warm, friendly, engaging, opening, you know, conversing with others, you know, which produces the result of appearing that people don't like me. And so when I really got that, it's just like it's so life-changing on so many levels to be able to challenge our beliefs and thoughts and really start to shift those. And I've literally spent the last 15, 16 years doing that, and my life is radically, radically different as a result.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like when people come to you as a life coach in your life coach role, you're able to take your lessons learned, you know, and apply them. And I think it's always cool to be a person that's, you know, being a teacher or taking the experience and kind of, you know, doing, you know, paying it forward by showing people that like, well, I'm not just going to keep this nugget to myself so I can be okay. I want other people to be okay too.
100%. And that was honestly like one of the biggest reasons of writing my book, A Joyful Life, was to actually distill that information firstly in my own mind. But it was written when my girls left home, because it was like, I don't want something to happen to me. And, you know, I do plan to be on the earth for a long time. But, you know, if something were to happen to me, it's like this wisdom has been amazing and transformational for my own life. And it's not me telling people what they should be doing. It's a guidance back to your own heart and your own inner wisdom as well around that. And I think that piece is so important, because what's right for me may not be right for somebody else. And certainly that's what I do my best, particularly as a life coach, is to put people, like help them shift certainly the painful beliefs and thoughts that they might have about themselves or about what's in the way of them creating what it is that they want in their life. But more importantly, you know, what is their own inner guidance? What's their own intuition saying? What is their own creative process around that? Because every single person has their own unique blueprint of what's right for them, I believe.
Yeah, that's what's so hard when you have these kind of blueprints that like you get on social media and say, well, the 10 steps to do this and 12. It's like what I find is like everybody is so unique. You kind of got to listen to their story and see what's going to work, right? So like people, there might be some parallels where you can find similar shared emotions. Like everybody feels certain things that's common, but individual unique experiences, you kind of have to hear what those are to figure out, well, what's going to work based on what you've experienced and what your knowledge base is. Like everybody's different. So you kind of have to tailor everybody. Is like care or everybody's conversation based on like what they've told you. We're not to say that it's a cookie cutter and everybody's going to fit in the same box.
Definitely not. No. And each person, you know, has certain things that resonate more with them as well. Like it's, you know, they might feel a particular way about something and be like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. Or this really helped me. And that really did not. But I think the other beautiful thing about working with somebody that has also walked the path is, I think, so many people these days, and I get it, you know, I was certainly one of them as well, was looking for the magic quick fix. Like, it's like the magic bullet, and how to just tell me, like, how do I get there, like, really quickly, or, you know, you can change all of your beliefs in like one session. And it's just like, it's just utter BS. Like, literally last week, I was still challenging the belief and thought, like, I'm failing and I'm not successful enough. I noticed my ego survival mind telling me these stories again. And so I went back and challenged the beliefs again and gave myself immediate freedom. But years ago, you know, that would have taken me out for like 3 months of feeling like a failure and feeling like I'm not good enough and therefore not following through on the actions and things. So I think when people can actually really understand, and I share parts of my story for that particular reason, like, it does take hard work and it does take commitment and awareness of, oh, I've got this thought coming up that's not serving me or that's creating pain, and now I've actually got the tools to challenge it. It's not that that's never going to happen again, or once you're happy forever. It's a moment-to-moment choice, and also moment-to-moment impacted by, you know, what we're experiencing in life.
Well, it's interesting. A lot of times, you know, we go to school, we get our degrees, and a lot of times we don't learn the skills that we need for everyday life. Mm. And people think that, oh, I got this degree, but if it didn't really teach you to manage your imposter syndrome, or manage your self-doubt, or manage your people-pleasing tendency, like, if you didn't get that from what you were studying, because you were going to be a doctor, or you're going to be a lawyer, you're going to be an engineer, so you were studying that. And then they said, well, do you think you're done? But then you have all these things, other things that happen. It's like, oh, how come it's not working? Because, like, everybody has to have tools. And I think we don't get those tools in our, you know, when we're going into our schooling or going into the training we get, there's pieces that are missing. Mm-hmm. And people are starting to find, it's like, why are all these pieces missing? What do I need? How do I fill those in?
Absolutely. I could not agree more. And I think, you know, I do believe, from what I've seen, or some small parts of what I've seen, there is some of that, you know, building confidence and things like that coming into schooling. But I still don't believe it's enough. And I believe a lot of schooling teaches us what to think, not how to think. And I believe that's a critical skill, particularly in today's world, that we need to learn how to actually think independently, rather than just like, oh, you know, basically giving everybody else, you know, the expert hat, and believing, yeah, well, they've got my answers. And because, again, as we just discussed, you know,
the problem is we get so into, like, well, learn Einstein's theory, or learn this algorithm, or learn this thing and show that you know it, versus like a Socratic method. Like, I went to school and it wasn't like an SAT. It was more like you had to talk to your professor and actually do an oral exam or do a blue book. Mm. And kind of actually put in your own words what you learned for that period. Mm. And so you had to learn how to apply it. And they do some kind of open-ended question that would basically, you'd have to bring in everything you learned and learn how to apply it in your own words. So you couldn't just refer to like a single answer. There could be multiple ways you could get at it. And they want to see where your thinking is. Kind of like, it's trying to make you, you know, dive into like a Socratic method, dive into something like Nietzsche would be trying to get you to do a Camus. He's like, think, like, use your mind and use it to actually be creative and learn how to process what you've learned and apply it for the right situation.
Yeah. Because, yeah, it's so true, because knowledge without application is useless. Like, it's, you know, we might know a lot, but unless we're actually applying it and implementing it in life, you know, that is really challenging in so many ways. But definitely, like, I'm so passionate about really making sure, you know, as many people that I come into connection with certainly have the skills and tools. And I think, you know, a huge kudos to Byron Katie for the work she's put out into the world. Like, that was life-changing for me. And I've spent, like, literally over six figures in, you know, taking care of like my own mental well-being and education and mentoring and coaching and learning and everything. And that one was for free. And it honestly has made the biggest difference in my world. And I think learning how to actually challenge our beliefs and thoughts and how we feel is so paramount. A few years ago, I was very passionate about getting this information into the hands of teenage girls. And when I started doing that, because I was like, man, like imagine, and I'm so grateful that I was on my learning journey that I could impart like a lot of what I learned to my girls at a younger age, that's certainly than what I was when I started. But what I realized very, very quickly was, no, I actually need to be working with the mums, because it was the mums also that were experiencing a lot of this pain and everything else. And you know, we can only do or share what it is that we know. So that was where it was like, okay, that's my role, is to support the moms.
You get to the mom, because that really is kind of root cause. Like if you can get to the parents,
totally. Because
a lot of times the parents don't know how much they're actually influencing their kids.
100%.
And have no idea that they've actually, they're suffering from, you know, anomie or ennui or all these things, and they're passing it on to their kid and they have no idea.
Yeah,
and then they wonder, like a whole family's been doing this for ages.
Mm.
And somebody finally breaks out of it and everybody's like, well, why are they so different? Why is Sally so different than everybody in the family? Well, she finally figured out that she doesn't want to be on that path.
Totally.
And now suddenly she seems like the oddball. But
yeah,
because she's not willing to do this. You'd be stuck in that for the rest of your life.
and there's challenges in that in itself as well. I remember feeling very isolated and alone, and you know, just feeling very different from everyone around me. And that's where like our self-love is even more important, because we need to be our own safety net at that particular time, and really having that bigger vision of what our life is about and what we're wanting for not only for ourselves but for our own children. But I know for myself as a mum, like when I hated me, oh my goodness, like that anger would spew out in ways that was so awful to my family, and it wasn't what I wanted to project, and it wasn't, which only made me beat myself up more and hate myself more, which only created more of the same. And I realized very quickly that self-compassion and self-forgiveness was the fastest way to exit that cycle as well for myself, of just really going, okay, you've had a tough day, you're clearly not okay, what is it that I need to do for myself, so that then when I would go and speak with my kids, I could do so from a much more regulated place as well. And it just made all the difference to my parenting, I believe.
Reducing stress is like a common theme of what we've been talking about. Like, what are the best kind of plans or ways to manage that? Like, they're kind of starting maybe like a top, like couple, like maybe three or four ways that people could digest it at the beginning, like if they're trying to figure out how to do that.
Yeah, I think the number one thing is awareness, right? Because if we can't make a choice, we can't make a change until we've actually become aware, I'm dysregulated right now, or I'm feeling stressed, or I'm feeling angry, or, and so many people, certainly a lot of the women that I've spoken to over the years, are in denial and disassociation of how they actually really feel, because it's been a coping mechanism to just get through the next day and the next day and the next day and the next day. So really number one is becoming aware, and maybe that's like 5 minutes of writing in a journal each day. How do I really feel? If I was totally honest with myself right now, how am I actually really feeling? Because our feelings give us so many clues as to what is the next right step for us as well. And when we're not listening to our feelings, or we're squishing them down or denying them or repressing them because we've been taught that our emotions are wrong, we lose our sense of guidance. And, you know, it's so beautiful when we're like, oh, I actually feel like happy today. Oh, well, why is that? What did I do that made the difference? Or where was my focus going? So number one is definitely awareness and taking time to journal. Number two, even just asking yourself, as I mentioned before, like maybe, you know, three things that I like, love and appreciate about myself, or what would somebody who truly loved themselves do today or in this situation? And getting, again, that internal guidance around those particular things, but really starting to acknowledge, I honestly believe that self-love is the number one reason that impacts our stress, Because when we feel good about ourselves, we have such a much higher level of resilience, capacity to be able to deal with life stresses, to be able to not take things as personally from others around us, and to be able to communicate much more directly and effectively in relationships as well, which again is a huge source of challenges for a lot of people as well, is you know, that self-love piece. So number two, like asking ourselves, what would somebody who loved themselves do today or in this particular situation, takes you straight back to your own internal guidance of what's right for you there. Number three would be, again, like getting in touch with, if I really loved and appreciated myself, what would I be doing for myself today, or how would I be living life? And starting to take some of those actions around that. I believe action creates so much change in our life. Without the action, without the follow through, that can be really, really difficult. And then, of course, you know, there's beautiful things like meditation, just slowing the mind down, even putting our legs up the wall. There's a yoga pose. If you'd like to Google it, it's not very hard though. It's literally just moving your bottom into the edge of the wall and putting your legs up the wall. You can put a bolster or a rolled up towel underneath your hips. And even that is, and taking some deep belly breaths is a beautiful way to really start to, just spending 5 minutes in that can be so restorative for our adrenal system. It relaxes the body back into the parasympathetic, and taking deep controlled breaths can be a way definitely of really letting the body know, hey, I'm safe, all's okay, and that can also decrease our stress as well. But often it's really understanding, yeah, what's causing my stress and what are the quick wins that I can take, particularly if you're lower in energy, what are the quick ways that I can relieve that stress or eliminate that stress? And even if it's just shifting my mindset using the Byron Katie technique, as I've also spoke about as well.
I think it's really important to kind of disconnect from the modern world.
And, switch off. Yes. Should have been one of the first things.
Yeah. You turn your phone off. You turn your watch off. You turn the computer off, turn the TV off, radio, all those things. And a lot of times it's like artists, but people say, well, how do you create, you know, art? A lot of times as a musician, we'll kind of just like get rid of all the noise, actually be in quiet, like don't even do anything on my piano, don't even do anything on my bass guitar. Just like be like in the room, just be quiet and kind of let the muse kind of come in. I feel like a lot of us artists, we can channel, but if things are too noisy or too like scattered, then it'll come out kind of scattered. But if you kind of get yourself into a meditative state, or even a state where you're just kind of like chilling out and not being influenced by all the noise, then you can actually hear the universe. I mean, well, that sounds foo-foo, but it's like, as an artist, like a lot of what we do is like we kind of feel that moment and figure out how to channel that moment. And it's a lot of stuff that's like dream state, subconscious stuff, external stuff, and you don't even realize what's happening until you actually see what the art that you're creating comes out. Because you let it out, you let it come out, and it's like art therapy. Like, is it just by letting that what's inside come out and channel what you're feeling, then you get the synthesis of the inside and the outside all at the same time. And that ends up being like what art is, in my opinion. But I think other people can, you know, you can journal. You could do voice memos. You could just, you don't have to be a painter to express yourself. Just do something that kind of takes that and puts it out, you know, so that you can analyze where you are.
Oh, I totally agree with that. I mean, nature is such a beautiful way of getting in touch with our authentic self again as well, or, you know, just being out in the sunlight, or, you know, so many different things. But I often find that as well for myself. Yeah, if I'm taking too much information in, I often will get like a download, like where I just get words given to me in my mind and just am typing away on the computer, like but it's coming through me. It's not from me.
Yeah, it's just like that muse state, like that. Like how the poets always talk about it, but you kind of get into it when you go into like stream of consciousness. Like if you do a kind of flow state, stream of consciousness, a lot of times artists will say, like, I could have wrote down what I wanted to do, but this kind of stream of consciousness flow state moment actually is better than anything I actually wrote on the page. anything I actually composed, what I actually trusted myself to channel the moment actually is better than anything I was trying to be very, very explicit about. And so it's like, I find it's like, once you open yourself up to that, that you can do that. And it's like, well, that's like magic. It's like, well, you just got to like quit thinking about how magical it is and just let it be.
I find too, like the shift, because I'm very aware, like certainly from over the years of all the tools and different things that I've used as well, of when I'm in my survival ego mind state, or what I call that, like living from our head, and that disconnection from our heart essence or our soul or whatever people would like to call it. But for me personally, like gratitude is such a fantastic way of like landing us straight back in our heart as well. It can be difficult to access, particularly if we're lower down in emotional frequency, like really angry or despair or powerlessness and things like that. However, gratitude, I think, and courage even are beautiful ways of opening the heart energy and being in that space and activating that energy. And that way, then we can really tap in and listen to that intuitive wisdom or the guidance or the inner muse that's coming through, and allow ourselves to essentially be soul led, both in life, business, or our creative play. And creative play is such another way of, you know, it's normally when I'm many people say, you know, I get inspiration in the shower, or I get inspiration when I'm out on the morning walk, or any of those things as well, because our cortisol's low, we're generally enjoying ourselves or having a fun moment. And if we're not trying to force it out or push it out or make it happen, which are all ego concepts, it allows it to flow in such a beautiful way. So yeah, I really like that, Phantom.
Yeah, it's collaborative, like capabilities, cool too. Mm-hmm. Like if you're like in a sports team and you get that kind of those magical moments, because there's all that muscle memory and all that just clicking, they just know what to do. It's like, you know, it just happens. They make the right plays, and maybe it's not what the coach had in the playbook, but they saw the opportunity and they know what the capability is. They just do it, right? Totally. And you find a way to kind of be super creative in that, you know, in sports and arts and music. It's like there's a way that when you're collaborating with other people that are in that same kind of frequency, where the teamwork kind of frequency, whether you're in a band or like a soccer team, or even like, you know, any other group of people that are working together and coordinating, sometimes it comes like it's not that there's one mind, but the minds are kind of all synced and they're all kind of working together, and it starts to happen. And you're like, wow, that collaborative energy is real positive. And anytime you get dissonant, they could go negative, you could get into a fight. But when it happens that you're in sync, it's really cool.
Absolutely. And I love that, the synchronization. That was what I was thinking through the whole way you were saying that. It's like that beautiful synchronization. And we can create that through having like a common vision or a common goal that everyone's working towards as well. I think when people are tapped in for a deeper reason in their heart as to why that's important to them, I think that also elevates that synchronization as well.
It's just real positive when people can be so negative today, but when you see them, people that can work together and you have positive outcomes, it's a really beautiful moment. And you know, you have to take those human moments as you can, because you can get so into despair with all the stuff you see in the news, but then you can still find people who are making those positive choices. And I think that's just, you know, to be able to be in that kind of, you know, thriving and, you know, kind of state where you're of abundance rather than lacking, like where you feel that like there is hope and you don't get caught up in the despair. There's a lot of things that are bad, but you don't have to, you can focus on, we'll try to make them better.
100%. Yeah. It's again, wherever our focus is going. And if we're really in, you know, in the ego survival mind, you know, focus can generally be very hooked into what's going wrong and what's going to hurt me and what's bad. And what am I trying to prevent from happening in the future that my mind is so focused on? And what I find too is the more exhausted someone is, and certainly this was true in my experience as well, the more exhausted we become, the louder that inner critic or the imposter or, you know, the the fears and the doubts and the anxiety and everything becomes as well, which can become like a very big downward spiral. So when people have awareness around that, really do their best, as challenging as it can be, to focus on or ask themselves, what do I want instead, and be able to change their positive focus, or change their focus even just to what do I want instead, even if that's just I want to feel a little bit better. It can be as simple as that. Yeah. It's powerful in that moment, and then it creates that upward momentum again.
Wow, that is a good strategy to have. One of the last things I like to ask, we're getting to the top of the hour, is are there three things about yourself that you could convey to the audience that maybe they wouldn't expect about you? Like three things that we've been talking about that they would be surprised to know about you.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. I learned how to weld when I was 18. My dad taught me very much how to weld, and I have a medium rigid truck license as well. So I've been very much taught how to take care of, some of the less likely things, I guess, that a woman would do. And one other thing, I've walked across fire 3 times and abseiled and hang glided, and I'm a little bit of an adrenaline junkie. So they may or may not have guessed that, but love doing lots of fun things like that as well, even though my body doesn't like it so much, but I do.
Well, I want to thank you again for being a guest on the Family Electric Goes podcast. It was really cool to talk to you from Australia. That's always amazing to me that I can do that. And I want to let people know that we were live on Facebook, YouTube, and Twitch, and then we're going to be on all the other platforms where you can listen to or watch a podcast later today, where that'll be where you are now in the next day, because we're on Sunday here in the States. But thank you again for being here on the show. We appreciate you being a guest on the Family Electric Ghost podcast, and wish you the best for the rest of the time, the day that you're on.
Fabulous. Thank you so much. It's so hard when you're talking in a different time zone, isn't it? But it's been an absolute joy and privilege to be here with you today, Venom, and really enjoyed our conversation for sure. And hopefully it'll serve some people as well and add value to their lives, or just give a little simple hint that makes life a little bit easier and better for them. So thank you so much for what you do and for bringing this to air.
I do want to encourage people to click on your Linktree. It's like Linktree Thrive_Sal Holden. That will be fully clickable when we're published everywhere. You'll be able to click through on that, and they'll be able to get in touch with you, all your links there. But thank you again for being on the show.
My pleasure. Thanks, Vandam.